Good morning. This is Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup. In his announcement yesterday, President Carter said, "I can think of no more clear and compelling challenge to the international community than the one we face today." But at the UN, the U.S. is still trying to line up the necessary 9 Security Council votes for economic sanctions against Iran and avoid a Soviet veto. CBS News UN correspondent Richard C. Hotlett reports.
The next step is consultations. Ambassador Donald McHenry will quietly compare notes with the other members of the Security Council on how to respond effectively to President Carter's request. These private talks are very useful in staking out how far the Council members will go in supporting economic sanctions. That averts surprises and confrontation in public when the Council meets. The consultations can go on for many days, and no one expects the Council to convene before the latter half of next week. The UN Charter lists a whole range of sanctions to deal with breaches of the peace, including, quote, complete or partial interruption of economic relations and of rail, sea, air, postal, telegraphic, radio, and other means of communication, and the severance of diplomatic relations. Preliminary conversations have shown no eagerness by any member to plunge into drastic action. Some democracies would need special legislation to impose restrictions. At best, the whole process is likely to be slow, and the example of Rhodesia, which carried on for more than 10 years with the help of South Africa, in the face of total UN sanctions, suggests that the effect on Iran would not be dramatic. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
More on the action by President Carter from CBS News White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint.
The president's move to get the United Nations to impose sanctions against Iran had a double purpose: to add pressure on the Iranians holding the hostages while releasing some pressure among increasingly frustrated Americans here at home. Mr. Carter and his aides have worked out a strategy of graduated steps which they feel can be successful short of military action. During the behind-the-scenes negotiating at the UN over the next several days, they hope to achieve unanimous or at least near-unanimous support in the Security Council for the cutting off of most exports to Iran, which is already feeling the pinch. One high administration official told CBS News that, for example, military spare parts are now in such short supply that Iran's military defenses are collapsing, and that the Ayatollah Khomeini has been warned by several of his advisors that he must find a way out of Iran's dilemma before the economy collapses as well. Meantime, Carter administration officials concede they detect increasing impatience among Americans for an end to the Iran crisis, and asking the United Nations to work on the problem over the holidays takes some pressure off President Carter. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News at the White House.
After his announcement, Mr. Carter flew off to Camp David for the holidays, staying close to Washington and passing up Christmas in his hometown of Plains, Georgia, for the first time in 26 years. United Nations Secretary General Kurt Waldheim told CBS News last night that the move to seek sanctions will not put a stop to his personal efforts to negotiate the release of hostages held at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. Another would-be mediator is reported on his way to Tehran. An Irish attorney and former Amnesty International president, Sean McBride, told United Press International in London that he is flying to Tehran at the request of the Iranian government. McBride has also been mentioned as a judge in the International Tribunal to look into so-called American crimes, but he said he expects to be in Tehran only a few days. The situation in Tehran on day 49 of the embassy occupation, reported by Liz Trotter.
President Carter's proposal for economic sanctions against Iran has met with the usual words of defiance from the revolutionaries here. A spokesman for the militants holding the U.S. embassy said the Carter proposal would have no effect on their decisions regarding American hostages, and that there would be no compromise no matter what the American government does. There was no official comment from the government of Iran, but earlier this week, revolutionary leader Ayatollah Khomeini said that no countries would cooperate with Carter's request for economic sanctions, and he added that attempts by Secretary of State Cyrus Vance to enlist the support of other nations in this regard had not succeeded. Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands of letters continue to pour into Iran from America, some addressed to the American embassy, others to individual hostages, and even some to Ayatollah Khomeini. There is no certainty the letters designated for the hostages are getting through to them, but the revolutionaries inside the embassy continue to say they are being delivered. Liz Trotter, CBS News, Tehran.
In his strongest statement yet on the Iranian crisis, Pope John Paul II today condemned the holding of hostages as a violation of the unquestionable international law, unquote. Yesterday in London, all parties to the Rhodesian settlement signed a ceasefire agreement. Today in Rhodesia, violence. Robin Wright reports from Salisbury.
Rhodesian police confirmed this morning that the Salisbury home of Patriotic Front co-leader Robert Mugabe was attacked today. A spokesman said three black men in a moving car opened fire on Mugabe's residence using rifles of Russian origin. A hand grenade was thrown at the house, but it did not detonate. Two of Mugabe's nephews, who live in the house, were injured and have been hospitalized. Mugabe's sister charged that internal black leaders were behind the attack. Police have not yet arrested anyone, although they do have the license number of the car. The attack took place on the first day of the ceasefire, organized under the British settlement plan. It also follows another attack on Cephas Msipa, a Patriotic Front organizer in Salisbury, 2 weeks ago. About the same time as the attack, the Patriotic Front opened its headquarters in Salisbury today. More than 1,000 chanting blacks demonstrated in front of the offices. Until today, the Patriotic Front has been illegal in Rhodesia. The signing of the final settlement plan in London yesterday has opened the way for all parties to campaign for the election early next year. Robin Wright, CBS News, Salisbury.
Shooting was also reported today in a township where supporters of the other guerrilla front leader, Joshua Nkomo, were holding a rally. On the presidential campaign trails, former California Governor Ronald Reagan has told UPI he may not win the GOP precinct caucuses in Iowa. The present California governor, Democrat Jerry Brown, last night accused President Carter of playing politics with the Iranian crisis, with his personal appearance to announce the turn to the UN for economic sanctions. And Democratic Senator Edward Kennedy continues to strike at Mr. Carter in another area. Susan Spencer reports from Nashua, New Hampshire.
Kennedy appeared last night before an enthusiastic town meeting in Nashua, New Hampshire, ending his two-day swing through this state with yet another slap at the administration for not using more muscle to help hold down OPEC oil prices.
OPEC decides what you're going to pay for home heating oil and for gasoline. They've been meeting for the last several days. And you know something? They jacked up the price of oil between 30, 40, and 50% across the world. Where was Mr. Carter speaking out for the consumers of New Hampshire, saying to the OPEC countries, we provide your security with the strength and the military might of the United States. We provide that for Saudi Arabia.
The candidate returns to Washington this afternoon. Then on Monday, he will become the first of the presidential candidates to get a full-blown State Department briefing on Iran. An ironic note, since the crisis in Iran has cast a shadow on his campaign since it began. Following that briefing, he will take off for West Palm Beach, Florida for Christmas and for some intensive staff discussion on how to get the Kennedy campaign really on track. Susan Spencer, CBS News, Nashua, New Hampshire.
The weekend before Christmas and no paychecks. Dave Ennett of CBS station WBBM reports on the payless problem of Chicago school teachers.
It was the first time since the Depression that Chicago teachers faced a payless payday, and this one came just as the schools closed for a two-week vacation. The question now is what will happen when that vacation ends, whether the teachers will get their paychecks, and what will happen if they don't. Teachers Union President Robert Healy asked teachers to return to their classrooms as scheduled January 2nd, but what happens after that depends on whether they get paid.
If we do not get full pay on January 4th, we will ask the school board to close the schools because they are unable to meet their financial responsibilities.
The schools had been counting on a bailout from the state to let them meet their $41 million payroll. The plan put forth by the state treasurer and Mayor Jane Byrne called for the purchase of $50 million in school board certificates. But Governor James Thompson refused to approve the plan, forcing teachers to begin their Christmas break without their paychecks. Dave Ennett for CBS News, Chicago.
Something of a thaw is setting into the Mississippi Valley, but with it is coming rain, heavy at times. Temperatures have risen to the 50s in southern Illinois.
CBS News. U.S. officials are hoping three American church leaders now on the way to Iran will be able to confirm or deny reports that the hostages have been taken out of the U.S. embassy in Tehran and put into a nearby building. This is John Bohannon reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Earlier today, a Roman Catholic source in Tehran was quoted as saying the hostages had been moved into an apartment building near the U.S. Embassy, but there's no confirmation of that. The three U.S. church leaders are on the way to see the hostages at the invitation of the Iranian Foreign Ministry. They'll spend Christmas with the Americans. The church officials are the Reverend William Sloan Coffin of New York City, Bishop Thomas Gumbleton of Detroit, and the president of the National Council of Churches, the Reverend William Howard. At John F. Kennedy Airport in New York City earlier tonight, Reverend Howard was asked about his goal during the visit to Iran.
I'm at this point expecting to have an opportunity to see all of those persons from the United States being held in the embassy. That is my conviction. I have every evidence that that is precisely the basis of our having been invited. The mere fact that we have been invited and have been given a commitment to meet with the people in itself is a hopeful sign about their well-being.
Seven other American church leaders are also on the way to Iran on an unofficial visit. They're going on their own and say they hope to be invited to visit the hostages when they reach Tehran. More CBS News in a minute.
Tax breaks that may be in store for the 1980 election year. If you missed this major story, you haven't been reading the Wall Street Journal. And in today's economic turmoil, you can't afford to lose touch with what's happening in every phase of business. So have a pencil ready for an important offer that will help keep you informed. Other journal articles reported the facts on Detroit's tailspin, the latest reading on the economy, and the cloudy outlook for retailers this Christmas season. You would have read about the encouraging prediction about oil supplies and the bleak outlook for municipal financing in the state that started the tax revolt. Another article examined aluminum stocks. They're beginning to reflect fears of a long, deep recession. The Wall Street Journal. It's all the business news you need when you need it. Right now, you can get 20 weeks of the journal, that's 100 copies, for only $22, a real money-saving offer. So in the continental U.S., call this toll-free number now, 800-228-2222. That's 800-228-2222, except in Nebraska. You'll be billed later.
Peggy Guggenheim died today in Venice, Italy. She owned one of the world's greatest collections of modern art and was a major influence in the development of abstract art. In a CBS News interview last October, Guggenheim said her family never thought she would succeed.
I guess they thought I was sort of black sheep of the family and would never do anything that was any good. I think I surprised them. My idea was to make a historical collection of all the non-realistic movements of the 20th century, beginning with Cubism. But I really felt I'd accomplished what I wanted to do, and I've done it very successfully, and I'm very happy about that.
There's no word on the exact cause of her death, but she had been in poor health recently because of a stroke. Peggy Guggenheim was 81. Officials in Turkey say four people survived the crash of a Turkish airliner tonight near the airport in Ankara. 39 people were killed. It was a domestic flight. The jet crashed as it came in for a landing. No word on what caused it. Police in Rome say several bombs exploded tonight near offices of Air France and TWA. No casualties are reported. An Armenian secret army group is claiming responsibility for the bombings. The Federal Trade Commission has released a report recommending that Congress consider a plan to use tax money to pay for anti-smoking campaigns in the mass media. The FTC says it would be an effective way to provide the public with information about the dangers of smoking. The South Korean Defense Ministry says former Army Chief of Staff General Chung Sing-hwa will face prosecution in connection with last October's assassination of President Park Chung-hee. The Defense Ministry says four other Army generals described as followers of General Chung are facing similar charges. They're all accused of helping the Korean CIA chief, Kim Jae-kyu, in Park's murder. CBS News continues after this.
Holidays were made for Michelob. Holidays were made for special friends.
What better beer than Michelob for the holiday season? Special enough to make the right impression. Friendly enough to show you care. No wonder Michelob has become a holiday tradition.
Holidays were made for special times, special places, special things. Those special moments the season brings. It's the time to have that smooth and mellow. It's Michelob. Holidays were made for Michelob. Holidays were made for Michelob.
Yeah. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
A storm is causing trouble tonight along the northern coast of California and Oregon and parts of Washington State. Gale warnings are in effect. Power lines have been knocked down in some areas. In Detroit today, the Reverend Francis Staton and Lula Archie got married. The bride is 78. The groom will celebrate his birthday on Christmas. He'll be 110. The newlyweds plan a honeymoon in Arkansas, a better choice than the Philippines. Officials in a city about 450 miles south of Manila have passed a law against kissing and hugging in movie theaters. Officials say it distracts the attention of others and also creates a scandalous atmosphere. Anyone convicted of violating the new law will be fined $13. John Bohannon, CBS News.